This is the Talk of Fame Network on SB Nation Radio from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's Clark Judge, Rick Goslin, and Ron Borges.
Well, you don't need us to tell you that Dwight Freeney was one of the great pass rushers of his era. You already know. I mean, Dwight ranks 19th on the all-time list with 125 and a half sacks, just one behind Hall of Famer Derek Thomas. And he teamed with last month's guest, Robert Mathis, to give the Indianapolis Colts one of the most feared edge rushes in the NFL. One, in fact, that helped the Colts win a league championship in 2006. Now, Dwight went to 7 Pro Bowls, hit double figures in sacks 7 times, including an NFL best 16 in 2004, and forced a league-leading 9 fumbles as a rookie in 2002. Now he's with us today to talk about his pass rush. And Dwight, before we get started, one favor to ask of you. Please don't rush the hose, okay?
No, definitely not. I'm retired now. You don't have to worry about that.
Hey, Dwight, at 6'1", you lack the prototypical height the NFL wants from its defensive ends. But after running a sub-4.4 40 at your campus workout, your draft stock took off. The Colts wound up selecting you with the 11th overall pick of the 2002 draft. What were your draft day expectations that morning?
Well, you know, I knew after the draft day that they were saying, hey, you know, you're going to be drafted anywhere from the 11th pick to, 29 or 30 or something like that. Now, we all know, sometimes it doesn't always go the way that people project. So, for me, I didn't know anything, from me. I just said, hey, you know what? I don't care where I go. Wherever I go, I'm going to have fun. This is a dream. I'm accomplishing one of those goals that you set, in the beginning of time where you say, I'm going to play in the NFL one day. So it didn't matter to me. I was a Giants fan growing up. So, that was the only team I was kind of leaning towards. Like, somehow get drafted by the Giants would be the dream coming out of college. But outside of that, it didn't matter who drafted me, but I was definitely excited once I heard it was a Tony Dungy led team in defense, because I've heard all the great things about him.
Well, obviously you went to the right place. As Clark mentioned, we had Robert Mathis on our show last week and talked to him about Tony Dungy and how Dungy placed a greater emphasis on speed than size. How did he impact your game, both as the head coach of the Colts and with the defense that he designed?
Well, I think he's just he's one of those coaches that it goes beyond just on the field stuff. You kind of look at him as more of a mentor, father figure type of guy than just, hey, he's the head coach. You kind of want to model your life around the way that he kind of carries himself, and you hold yourself up to a certain standard that he would want you to be. So, That's a day-to-day thing. That's what you do, when you're not in practice, when you're hanging out with your boys, you always remember what Coach said and the things that he stands for. And it kind of helps you navigate through life, really, the right way. Now, obviously, from a football perspective, Coach Dungy, was all about speed, quickness, and using those types of weapons to attack offenses, and that's how he drafted. When he drafted the Indianapolis Colts and picked the guys, it was all quick, fast, speed guys, which I liked, because for me, obviously, I was one of those guys. But if you think about it, we're not playing basketball. We're not out here grabbing rebounds and blocking shots. So for us, it's about, starting at point A and getting to point B.
Dwight, the Colts have an edge rush complement the following season when they drafted Robert Mathis. Like you, he lacked the prototypical size to play in, but not the speed. Like you, he led the NFL in sacks one season. How competitive was it between you and Robert during those 10 seasons you played together? And did you feed off each other?
Yeah, it was great. It was something that, every day you go out there and practice, you see, your brother on the other side. It was like we had a singular heartbeat, a singular mindset. When we went out there to do the things that we needed to do, to help this team win. And that's kind of, that was kind of the story with us. We made sure that we took care of business. We had a great Hall of Fame D-line coach. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. It's John Turling, to where as though he made rushing the passer fun. He taught us, lessons and things that other greats like John Randall and Neil Smith and other guys that he's coached went through, and even Jay Dolman. So he kind of, you know, put that on us. And when, so when it was just me and him, you know, and he made a play, you know, I'm not going to say he made a play so I had to make a play. We always felt like we had to make the play. So it's never like turned on, turned off. But when he made a play and a big play, it just energized me even more, you know. So if I was giving already 120%, I'm giving 180%, you know, just because, you know, okay, you did it, now it's my turn. And then it's my turn, I did it, and it's, okay, it's your turn, you know. And that was kind of the mentality that we had.
Now, you played right defensive end in the scheme out there in Indianapolis, so you lined up against really all the Hall of Fame left offensive tackles of that decade, Jonathan Ogden and Pace and Walter Jones and all those guys. Who gave you the most problems, the most difficulties? Who did you look forward to seeing least?
Definitely Jonathan Ogden. I 100% will say that, because he's a guy that I just felt like he was a walking cheat code. He was somebody where he shouldn't be that big, he shouldn't be that strong, and if he is that strong, he shouldn't be that fat. and he was everything. he was like the corner that never came. Like, you're trying to run the corner as a defensive end, you're trying to get the corner. He was a corner that never came because he was so long and so fast. By the time you ran around him, you ran 20 yards up the field, you know, and the play will be done. So, you know, the only advantage that I had against him was that I was the polar opposite of what he normally sees on a consistent basis. He had to, like, block at his ankles to try to block me, which is great. So that was the only advantage I had. But other than that, man, that guy gave me nightmares.
Did you have any success against him, Dwight? Is there any game where you remember, hey, yeah, I got the better of him?
Yeah, I had a couple good ones. And I said the only reason why is because he was so different for him to block a guy that was so different than him. You know, I have natural leverage, you know, the height thing, right? Natural leverage. So I was able to get under him a couple times and get him moving because of my speed and things of that nature. And he was blocking somebody that wasn't his typical size. So he had, you know, maybe it broke down some of the fundamentals or something that he normally has or whatever, you know, because it's hard. You watch film trying to prepare for a guy, and you kind of watch film and say, okay, this move really works good on him. This is what I'm going to do. So you watch film on him, you see nothing. you don't see anybody winning or beating him. So it's kind of like, all right, well, shoot, that's out the window. The tape is out the window. Let me just go out and just give my hardest effort, and hopefully, you know, what I'm doing actually works. And, you know, it happened to work, but it didn't work all the time. He's the only guy that I would say, like, I literally could just, like, stonewall me, throw me, eject me across the field. You know, so I think the first time I actually had a pass rush against him, I was I'm a rookie year. And I bull rushed him. And I was like, oh, yeah, this Jonathan Ogden, I got him. I'm going to surprise him with a bull rush. Well, I had him moving back about two steps. And after that, the last thing I remember, I was flying through the air because he tossed me another 5 yards. He tossed me further than I actually drove him. You know, so it was just like, I guess I'm in the NFL now.
Hey, Dwight, now you're out of the NFL. You're eligible for the Hall of Fame in 2023. Do you think about the Hall at all?
You know what? I partially do, you know, and I partially don't. And when I say that, it's like, yes, I would love to be in the Hall of Fame. And that's something that, you know, it's that icing on the cake type of deal, you know. But I also know it's not up to me. I've already put my work in, and it's going to be what it's going to be. There's no going back. You know, it's you know, guys like you guys and whoever else votes, you know, you look at whatever I've done or whatever influences that I've, you know, brought to the game and say, hey, you know, this guy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame or not. You know, I know this, that I left my mark on the game. You know, before me, there wasn't any guy really drafted like me doing the things that I do on a consistent basis. If there was a guy my size being drafted, that guy was a specialty guy, maybe, you know, thrown in on only third down situations, maybe, you know. And so I know, like, when I turn the television on draft day, or when I see the NFL now, how you have guys who are, you know, not the tallest guys in the world, around my height, and they're allowed to brush the passer, I know I left my mark, you know. And when you sit there and watch, and you see guys using spin moves, I know I 100% left my mark. So for me, is that I left my mark in the game, you know, and whatever happens outside of that, you know, God willing, hopefully it happens. But if it doesn't, it is what it is.
Today's game obviously has changed so much. You know, you can't hit. You not only can't hit the quarterback, you can't even land on top of him if you happen to be allowed to tackle him, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
So, you got to ask for permission.
You know, I asked Mathis. I said, now that he's coaching, I said, what do you say to a lineman who says, where am I supposed to land after I tackle a guy if they're going to yell at me for landing on top of him? And he said, he didn't have an answer. But how would you have had to alter your rushing style if you were playing 2018?
Well, I don't ever think I alter. I'd be completely honest. It's going to be to the discretion of the ref, and I think that's the problem with the game right now. It's too subjective. It's you know, if the ref thinks it was a hard hit, if the quarterback acts like he got hurt, you know, it's all those things. Like, I don't. It's too hard to be rushing the quarterback. Get, you know, a guy like Jonathan Ogden or whoever on your back. You're fighting for your life against that guy, okay? So by the time you finally get to the quarterback, because your momentum hasn't stopped, you're still running as fast as you possibly can to get to the quarterback. When you get there, it's not like the quarterback is allowing you and letting you just tackle him and sack him. And you know, it's not like that. It's a guy trying to not get sacked. It's a guy who wants to throw you off. I've missed probably 40 or 50 sacks in my career because a quarterback, it isn't not even a mobile quarterback. I'm talking about just a normal quarterback where I think I have him, and he kind of throws me off. He kind of just like flails his arms, or he moves his feet to where I fall off. So if you're trying to get the sack, and you gotta hit him, you gotta put some force into him. If you don't, you're going to be missing a lot of sacks and a lot of plays, and you're going to be hurting your team. And the landing on him is the most ridiculous thing in the world. It's because, look, you're making a tackle, all right? Running backs can get landed on. Receivers can get landed on. Everybody can get landed on. And you're not trying to necessarily hurt the quarterback when you land on him. But in the end, if your momentum happens to take you that way, and the offensive lineman is on your back, there's nowhere else to go. So it's kind of like, how do you position yourself to where you make that tackle and a secure tackle? Yeah, you can try to not and lean your body to the side, but you're now running the risk of missing a tackle, costing your team the game, costing your career because you might get cut because you're not making tackles, you're not making plays, that which means causes your family food on the table, and it's too many things. So basically, to make a long story short, I wouldn't change anything. I would let the ref make the call. If the ref's going to make the call, then so be it. It's going to be the call. But I can't alter my game because it's too hard to get there.
Hey, Dwight, thanks so much for the time. Love talking to you, and best of luck going forward with your Hall of Fame candidacy.
Hey, man, no problem. Thank you for having me.
That was former Colts star Dwight Freeney. Up next, it's the 2-Minute Drill. You're listening to the Talk of Fame Network.